I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is
Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Welcome back, everybody. We're back with a full-length episode. We're going to talk about an episode of SeaQuest DSV. Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
That is nice.
Did you miss it?
Yeah, but I was doing something cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like we mentioned in the previous episode and the bonus episode bridging them, the interruption was because of the annual Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, abbreviated and URL'd and otherwise better known as C2E2 2025.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We had a whole weekend of adventures and experiences, and we could record a whole bonus episode just about it. Maybe we will. I don't know. We've done it before.
We have.
I would like to start this episode just talking about the directly SeaQuest-related portions of it.
Yes. And there was a lot, let me tell you.
First of all, you went and turned some, like, off-the-rack, like, jumpsuits.
Uh-huh.
I tried mine on for sizing. I felt like I should be, like, hitting a boiler with a wrench sort of jumpsuits.
Yeah, they were, like, Dickies brands or whatever.
Yeah. And turned them into really nice approximations of the season 2-3 sea suit costume.
They are so fucking good. You do not understand. I added complete quilted shoulders to these things, which is like the most perfection thing I've ever done in my life. It looks so damn good.
Yes.
We have the straps. I got
the straps and the buckles
ordered from the guy who like has a SeaQuest jumpsuit and like 3D printed them to look like the appropriate little snaps.
So yeah, the shoulder buckles that the SeaQuest cast has on their outfits that snap into their like tactical gear and vests.
Yeah, we got those.
Those are not standard buckles.
No.
So, you got the 3D printed replicas.
3D printed replicas, and then
from an Etsy seller.
I had to put like 20 bajillion belt loops on these things, in addition, again, to the quilted shoulders. Mine is completely tailored. Mine looked like an absolute fucking balloon.
It was a bit of a potato sack.
It was an
when
awful jumpsuit to get it to, you know, fit and have enough space for certain things. And I completely tailored it. I'm so proud of them.
You did a great job.
There's probably like 40 hours of work in these jumpsuits, but if you look at them, it just looks like I put patches on them. But like, I did it. I did so much more.
One of my favorite little details that no one would ever know is that yours was a short sleeve jumpsuit.
It was. And I did not like that because they don't have, they either have no sleeves, they have their like arms out stuff.
Right.
Or they have long sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have short sleeves.
Or, as is demonstrated in the episode we're going to talk about shortly.
Yes.
They roll their sleeves up and use the side sleeve buckles.
Yes.
So what you had done is,
I made fake rolled up sleeves. I added
extra
sleeve extensions.
An extra cuff of fabric to look like a rolled up sleeve.
Yeah. I also bought a third jumpsuit to use as scrap material for all of this. It would match.
Which was very smart, yes.
Which is how I was able to do the applique shoulder stuff and the fake cuffing, which looked so good, and make all my belt loops out of the right material. When I say 40 hours, I'm not lying.
So a big thank you to that Etsy seller, the source of the replica buckles, the source of the replica rank insignia and other patches.
Yes, very, very good. Very good seller out there.
Sent
us some nice special buttons for the anniversary year last year, too. It's like the only person selling the shit on Etsy. So, like, if you look it up, you'll find them. I got a little dolphin plushie so little baby Darwin could go with us.
Yeah.
He hung out in my pocket.
Yeah, it was very cute. It was very good.
Yeah.
And so your goal was to have, like, five people. That was the number you said.
I said if five people recognized what we were dressed as, I'd probably cry.
We got stopped. We had 20 Sequest conversations on Friday.
Yeah.
And then we wore them again on Sunday, and it happened at least a dozen times.
Yeah, I lost track.
So
the joy I got from this, the double takes that we experienced every time, and the shock on people, best thing ever.
So that includes, like, people going drive by, hey, Sequest, as, you know, we pass, and it also includes, like, full conversations.
Yes.
Around the round tables when it's chicken fingers time.
Yeah. Or like that one girl that was dressed as Amos from The Expanse.
Yeah.
Yes. Who then recognized me. Bond. We should have traded phone numbers. I feel like we'd be friends.
So I would just like to say hello to everyone who we spoke to and talked about Sequest and the show Whiskers.
And who maybe scanned our little QR code.
Thank you for joining us. I know it's the 30th episode, so you probably started episode one and you've been waiting a while for this conversation. But maybe. Hey, thanks.
Yeah. I really hope there's someone out there who did, like, scan the little code.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It was great. It made me so excited. It made me so excited that people were so excited to remember the show.
Right, right.
Because, like, all of them were like, oh my god, I haven't thought about Sequest in years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're just, like, so, like, you could just see the memory coming back.
Right, and this is other, like, attendees like ourselves. This is booth people.
Yeah.
Like, exhibitors and such. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we didn't just do this. You didn't just do this because we wanted to share Whiskers around. It was definitely a great reason to strike up those conversations.
Yeah.
But there was a Sequest cast member as one of the big celebrity guests.
Technically, there were supposed to be two, but the one guy canceled.
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Levin bailed.
Timothy Odmanson got a job and had to film, like, immediately.
I guess that's good for you, sir.
But
fine, have a career.
But Michael Ironside, who is not going to be just a mere guest star when we eventually catch up to him.
No,
he is main cast season 3.
Yes.
So I don't know if we want to talk much about him for spoilery reasons.
I feel like we should just leave it there.
We should just leave it. Just wait. We're going to be talking about Michael Ironside a lot in the future. Yeah. Of Whiskers.
Spoilers, we really like him. We'll leave it there. We really like him and his character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, he was there for Starship Troopers.
Big anniversary year. They had 5 members of the cast as celebrity guests doing a big, like, panel together.
And I was just like, we can't go and not, like, do this. Because, like, when he was announced, like, at that point, you don't know if people are doing autographs, photo ops, you don't know, even really know what panels are going to happen. But I was like, if there is an opportunity, if all he is doing is a panel, we have to go in costume and hope that, like, we can go to the mic and be acknowledged for our outfits. Nothing else that has to happen.
But he was doing the whole autograph thing, and so we got in line on Friday.
Uh-huh.
While all dressed up.
Yes.
And this was great. This is a good conversation. This is a good moment. But, like, I kind of wish that his panel was before, because Michael Ironside, one of the most typecast men in history.
Yes.
Right?
Plays all the scary military dudes.
He's always stern. He's always intimidating. Whether hero or villain, he is solid and he looks at you and you want to die.
I was worried he hated us. Especially because we showed up in Sequest jumpsuits.
we have a listener. We have a listener who wore his Sequest costume on Saturday and did, like, the whole photo thing. And apparently, from a post on Blue Sky, Michael Ironside took one look at this guy and said, "Fuck you."
I think he wanted to say that to us, but I looked too giddy and happy to see this man, and I don't think he could crush my soul. I was totally fangirling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I spoke. I was so proud of myself. I might seem like a very, like, I am a social person. I am the most social extroverted introvert, when I clam up, I fucking clam up. And there is no way out of it. And I was like, so either I'm going to not be able to stop talking.
Sure.
or I will say no words to this man and just stand next to you and smile.
Now, to be clear, before as we go on and tell the story of our up close and our far away encounter, because we should talk about how he was in that Starship Troopers panel too. But he is a full human being.
Yes,
he is not a consolidation of his characters, and that is true of every single actor in the world. These are things you know logically, but you don't feel it when someone is as like 95% typecast as Michael Ironside. Like the dude never done a comedy, right? Like there's no exception.
I felt like I was gonna be in front of like my dad to get yelled at. And he's super nice.
He's super
but
nice.
You're just like, oh God, oh God.
So, yeah,
yes,
we
sir.
Say hello. We present, like, we brought our
Sequest,
our
complete,
complete Blu-ray.
Which I
available
did
at Menards, but not necessarily your Menards.
Feel like I had to point out, I promise season 3 is in here and that you are in the show. I know you're not, like, pictured anywhere on the cover of this thing, but you are in here. Can
not
you please sign it? Can you sign it? I promise you're in here.
I swear. That's why he turned it over in his hands, to try to find his picture.
I feel, well, yeah, because it doesn't look like, it doesn't look like he's a part of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He wanted to say things.
Yeah, yeah.
About his opinion of the show and the production of the show.
Like, Roy Scheider came up in conversation, I think, because
You're talking about Movie Star Minute.
Yeah, I mentioned the show to talk about Movie Star Minute to then say, I can't wait until we get to your movies, because I am really looking forward to talking about, like, Scanners and, Starship Troopers. Why not?
Mm-hmm. And Free Willy.
Sure, sure.
We're watching Free Willy for it.
Well, it is aquatic. But mentioning Roy Scheider, his response was, he almost sank that boat.
And then he was like, I shouldn't say more.
I shouldn't say more. Like,
and I was like, it's okay, I think we know what you're going to say.
I was happy to take it as, they almost sank the boat lots of times in the narrative, but like, he's not talking about the narrative.
Mm-mm.
No,
mm-mm.
No.
I'm just like, I'm really mad they never let you finish season 3.
Yes.
Really mad.
Yeah.
You're great. We love you.
God.
But we got a nice autograph.
We got a nice autograph.
We got a nice picture.
Oh my God. So this picture is the most uncomfortable I've ever been. Because like the booth minder takes your phone to take the pictures, and he comes around the booth to like, so this picture.
You look so awkward in the first half. You look better in the second half.
Well, he puts his arm around my waist and pulls me in, and
as he said, it's to make him look thinner.
Yeah.
He wants us to block him.
So, the first half of the pictures before I figure out what to do with my arm on his side.
Yeah.
The second half, I put my arm around his shoulders. That's probably what he intended. But for the first half, I look like the lady in prom photos.
Yeah.
That's how it looks.
Yeah. It's great. I just kind of had my arm floating behind him.
But
I didn't want to touch him. I felt like that was rude.
But yeah, Michael Ironside demanded, insisted, let's soften it, insisted he hug me.
Yes. I got a hug too.
We got hugs. He said, I have a nice sense of humor. He said some very nice things to you as well.
Yes.
So yeah.
I don't know if he hugs everyone, but we got hugs.
We got hugs.
He also called us nerds to everyone in line. And you know what? I'm fine with that. It's okay.
Oh.
As we're posing with baby Darwin.
It's not an incorrect assessment.
No, I was like, correct here. Correct here, let me tell you.
That was Friday.
I was walking on a high the rest of that day.
We had a good time Friday. Saturday, come back in casual, normal human clothes.
My feet hurt so bad
from
Friday.
The boots you wear with your costume.
We clocked 7 miles that day, and my boots made it okay to like mile 5. And then that we were past the point of comfy for those boots.
So then Sunday comes around. Sunday is the day of the Starship Troopers panel. Yes. It is Michael Ironside programming day. So we're back in the C-suits.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Obviously. Also, I spent 40 hours on them. We're wearing them a second time.
And we go to, on the main stage, was it 30 years? Whatever the number is.
Yeah.
There we are. Watching Casper Van Dien and Dina Meyer and Denise Richards and Jake Busey and, of course, Michael Ironside. Mm-hmm. And double, of course, Jake Busey's gigantic service dog.
Oh my god, he had a Great Dane.
She sure was the greatest of Danes.
She was so sweet. She was so cute. And so big.
I love watching these panels because I love the interpersonal dynamics.
Yeah.
Who gets what out of it? Who brings what energy? Who responds to what sort of questions? Mm-hmm. Are all up in the air. Like, they had a six-person Lord of the Rings cast reunion.
Yes, they did.
The Four Hobbits, John Rhys-Davies, and Mr. Performance Capture. Monkey Man. You know. The Planet of the Apes Monkey Man. Everyone loves him. but like watching that was a different experience too. They had all five teens from the Breakfast Club together for the first time.
Andy Serkis, my god, there it is.
For the first time since the movie came out. Emilio Estevez.
Yes.
His first, he's always a holdout, so his first time. And like watching him in his like opening statement and seeing like, wow, this is an important moment for him. He's really getting something out of this and like connecting, and that's great. And then watching him the rest of the time, just like not know what to do.
Or when to do it.
Or when to do it.
He did a good job trying.
While Judd Nelson is literally recruiting us to a cult.
I think so.
The John Hughes cult.
Like, John Hughes is great, but like, I'm a little concerned actually about his level of commitment. It feels a little Scientology-ish.
So for this Starship Troopers thing, yeah. It's like Jake Busey trying to be like the class clown, a big showman, right? Casper Van Dien, really loving memories, loving telling stories, and willing to play and roll with any sort of punch. Dina Meyer the same way. Michael Ironside would love to talk stories from set, mm-hmm. would love to talk about theme and
the process.
And process. Mm-hmm. If you ask Michael Ironside a question from a in-fiction point of view, what are you doing? He will want you shot. He yes. will ask for you to be ejected.
Yes.
Like, when they go to crowd questions, one of them's like, oh, if the bugs invaded right now, here in the hall, which one of you would be the leader? And, like, some of them are saying, well, obviously, Michael would take charge. He's just that kind of guy. And Dina Meyer's like, well, the service dog. I'll follow her anywhere. And Michael Ironside's response is, what a stupid fucking question. Get out of here.
I also love that there were moments where it, like, looked like he was completely checked out, but when they'd finally get to him, he'd, like, answer the past three questions.
Yes.
In very, like, detailed responses. Because he'd be like, okay, let me answer that. Now let me go back to the other two. Mm-hmm, now this mm-hmm. is what I'm going to say. And it's like, I wasn't even sure if you heard them.
The story of him, like, getting heat stroke.
Oh my god, yes.
And in the scene in the pit. Yeah.
And, like, where Casper was like, the reason I knew he wasn't okay is because he forgot his line. And he doesn't do that.
And his line is just screaming, pull me out, over and over again. It's not a hard one.
And he was like, what do I say? And he was like, hey, help! Help! We need help over here!
But one of my favorite moments yeah. of that is the other awful question.
Yeah.
Specifically to Denise Richards, the least talkative of the panel.
Yeah.
Aside from the dog, who does not speak English,
yeah.
but she's a good girl. Like, hey, what's harder, flying a spaceship or being a Bond girl? And she paused, and her response was, well, I'm an actor.
It's my job.
Michael Ironside lifts the mic to his lips and says, stupid fucking question. Get a life, misogynist prick.
Yes. This man will not take shit. No. But again, like, nicest man, yeah. But like, don't ask stupid shit. And what I also appreciate, because like a lot of like with Starship Troopers, they're talking about themes of it and like stuff relates to like the world right now.
He only took the part because the director's like, it's going to be about fascism. And he's like, okay, cool. Because he read the book. He told the story that I think he's told several mm-hmm. times in different places about how his father or grandfather was like really involved in the golden age of science fiction. Mm-hmm. He has an advance manuscript of Dune in a shoebox somewhere.
His like, sister has.
Right, right. So like he read the book, was not impressed, was approached for the part and didn't take it until like, oh, this is what your take is. Okay, cool.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like, I mean, they were talking about how, you know, when they were doing press circuits for the movie and like mm-hmm. people thought it was pro things that it wasn't.
It is certainly a depiction of fascism.
Yeah. But to, it's not
to
like
what purpose there may be some debate.
And just like the direct way he's like, they obviously haven't seen the movie and they're idiots. Like, and I'm just like, I like this man. This is great. Yeah. I appreciate someone who's like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Like,
that's stupid. Shut up.
Like,
get a life, misogynist prick.
Which, again, all this makes him sound like a complete asshole, but it's done in the right way.
Part of kindness is mm-hmm. being an asshole to the right people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Like fascists. Just gonna say. We had a good time.
We had a good time. Looked at a lot of fun art, saw a lot of fun things. Heard about how much Peter Weller hated registering for wedding gifts.
To eventually get to a story about Fringe.
The television program Fringe and his single episode role in it.
Okay.
Which is fantastic.
My most shocking moment of C2E2 was the amount of people who recognized what we were.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Shock and joy. My second most was talking with Peter Weller and like walking away with like, what the fuck just happened?
Who do you think had the best Verhoeven impression? Peter Weller, Michael Ironside, or Casper Van Dien?
That's a good question. Maybe Peter Weller, because he used like voices.
He was very energetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I was excited for the fact that like he was in a Fringe episode. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, cool. Because I haven't actually seen all of RoboCop. Didn't think I was getting a Fringe story out of that meet and greet that lasted like 8 minutes, and I think everyone behind us in line was mad.
There's a reason the line moves so slow. It's because Peter Weller doesn't shut up.
He's going to tell everyone a story. Everyone in the world's getting a story.
But I've got a story to tell.
Oh.
And that is the story of Sequest Season 2, Episode 7, By Any Other Name. This is written by Lawrence Herzog, back from the episode Playtime, and directed by Bert Brinkerhoff.
Mm.
Bert Brinkerhoff is originally a stage actor, moved to television acting, and then television directing. He has Emmy nominations as both an actor and director in the 1970s. He went on to direct 17 episodes of ALF.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Sequest, became a major director and also producer on Seventh Heaven.
Oh, Jesus. That show, man. That show was so weird.
Well, without Seventh Heaven, we'd never have The Secret Life of the American Teenager.
At least The Secret Life of American Teenager was like, our drama is going to be around pregnancy. And not like, I stole a cup from a restaurant and now I'm returning it and now I'm going to jail. And I smoked pot once and now my life is over.
A very special episode of Seventh Heaven is how I learned about cutting.
My favorite one is, like, the random suburban girl that's in a gang. And has, like, knives. I think she dies by a knife fight or something. I'm not exactly sure. Never actually, like, watched it regularly. Just like, oh, it's randomly on. And I'd be like, what the fuck is happening?
This episode begins with an exterior establishing shot of the Calamar Colony, a UEO horticulture station.
Yes.
Of course, a domed facility on the seabed.
And we see a lovely flower field in here and a guy running for his life with dramatic music playing in the background.
The horns are insistent that this man keep running, terrified.
Through the land pavilion.
I don't think
maybe
it's the land pavilion. I really want it to be the land pavilion from Epcot, but
see, through most of this is definitely not, but there is this one shot where he is running that it so looks like the land pavilion. And I'm just going to pretend it is.
It's definitely the interior and exterior of a greenhouse. And then we wind up in a botanic garden.
And then like a weird old house.
And a weird old house. But yeah, he's running. He gets into this house. He finds the radio room of the control facility that is disguised as a weird old house.
Yes.
Wink, wink.
Yes. With the most generic ass plant photos from HomeGood. And he does a mayday out you know, they're all in trouble. And then he gets attacked by unseen things.
Screaming into the monster POV camera looming over him.
Yeah.
This episode loves monster POV.
Yes, it does. So do I, honestly. It's pretty good.
So there is our cold open, and as we rejoin the action... Well, action might be overstating it.
So Tony's in the moon pool trying to entice Darwin to eat a fish.
Mm-hmm. And they talk for so long about how you convince someone to eat food. We talk about how Tony got over being a picky eater. We talk about when he first ate oatmeal. this
and
keeps going.
Bridger's just like, maybe we should call your mom because she seems better at this than you. Because the whole problem is Darwin here has not eaten for a couple days.
For days.
He's not talking. Something is off with our buddy.
Piccolo theorizes, girl trouble. Could be a lady dolphin. Heartbreak.
Darwin hasn't been around any, so maybe he needs a lady dolphin. Needs a little if you know what I mean.
He's a grown boy.
Yeah.
So while they're trying to figure out what's going on, Dagwood enters C-Deck on his mopping rounds.
Yes.
And is like, hey, we've got a psychic here. Maybe you should talk to her.
And they're like, oh, maybe. Maybe we should.
Yeah.
And Dagwood's like, you know, she knew when Tony was with a girl instead of at that seminar.
And Tony says, thank you, Dagwood, and he accepts the compliment none the wiser.
Welcome.
Yeah. So as they're going to leave and ask their medical professional for her medical and or psychic opinion about this disturbance.
Yeah, which I will say, Bridger points out, like, in the scene, like, well, she's not a veterinarian. And I'm like, well, Wes Phelan was. Maybe you should get her back.
Well, she wasn't psychic. That's the exchange. That's
well,
the trade-off.
I'm sorry. The veterinarian seems a little more important. Just go say.
But yes, Dagwood looks very proud of himself, puffs out his chest. He made a suggestion that the captain is going to listen to.
But before the captain can do anything, they get the mayday call comes in to them. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, hey, we got to change our course and we're going to go here. And they're like, okay, what mayday can a flower farm have? But sure. And he's like, Lucas.
Really sharp thorns. They get you so bad.
Poison ivy everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
So, yeah.
It's a nudist colony. It's really bad.
Scientists are so weird. So, Bridger finishes his bridge visit by collecting Lucas.
Yes.
And
to go see Dr. Smith.
The whole dolphin family knocks on her door and interrupts her, watering her plants and talking to them.
Yeah. They're like, so, Darwin's not okay. Can you read him? And she's like, oh, I guess I could.
Please use psychic powers on my friend. Please, psychic my friend.
I'm just like, why have we not thought about this? And I don't know, why didn't she already do this? Why did this take a few days?
Why did we have to stop and pause and define veterinarian? Like, this episode is so slowly paced.
Yes.
This is introduced in the cold open as a huge action episode. In my memory, it is a big act, like... People are going to shoot laser rifles.
We get there.
It takes a while.
Yeah. So, they arrive at the colony. It doesn't take long to get there. And can just dock the entire Sequest to it?
Mm-hmm. It's compatible. They're building colonies for Sequest.
It boggles my mind, though. It's so weird, because Sequest is so big. It does mm-hmm, not mm-hmm. seem like that should be
possible.
We're
supposed to have shuttles, dang it. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like you would want to drive your giant sub up to a wall. Just gonna say.
Henderson is very good at her job. Thank you very much.
So a landing party goes out with two no-name people. Oh my god, they're definitely gonna die.
I do not like their odds, but with them is Brody and Ford and Ortiz and Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a thing that I think really exemplifies the difference between the first two seasons for me.
Okay.
Which is that when there is this, like, landing party, or particularly when it's a fire team, mm-hmm. like Brody rounding up a posse, like in Playtime, this writer's previous effort, it includes named characters.
Yes.
Crocker never brought named people.
Well, no, because we didn't name anyone else. Name anyone else that was considered, like, aside from, like, Ford doing his Rambo shit.
Right, and no. And eventually...
Ortiz. Well, but Ortiz had the
yeah.
Yeah, he was like, hey, I'm gonna, like, put these drugs in my eyeballs for some reason.
And eventually Shan is what I was gonna say. So, like, we care, we're invested in what the action shooty crew is doing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the season one model, where that's very rare... what's important is the Sequest and its capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
What's important is, like, Ortiz is most effective on sensors and whiskers.
Yeah.
Season two, having someone to get the guns out and also shoot laser rifles is more important than scanning, than sonar, than driving the ship, because Henderson has a gun and not the steering yoke.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an emblematic difference in focus.
It's also a difference in how often we send Ford in season two versus Bridger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Big difference. Ford goes and does a lot more stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is honestly more to the Next Generation model.
Mm-hmm. So they're walking around this flower colony, and there is scary fucking music and shaky... like, monster point of view cameras, left
constantly,
and right.
Constantly, constantly.
If you were like, man, I wonder if it could be scary walking through flowers, they're like, we're gonna try.
While they're just chit-chatting, walking around a botanic garden, eventually, they find piles of dirt in the biking paths.
And they're like, wow, that's weird. Is this, like, fertilizer? Seeds? Huh. And I'm like, it's sand. It's sand.
They promise to take a sample for analysis. We learn that this colony should be home to around 160 people between the scientists and the support staff.
Yeah. There is no one fucking there.
Absolutely vacant.
There are a lot of cool ass trees and plants, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But no people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we, of course, have a moment where we split off into two groups and you're like, oh, fuck, that's going to be bad. Like, nothing really bad happens, but one guy, no name dude.
Trig?
Trig. Because he actually has a name.
Yeah.
Trig trips and falls.
Yes.
Because he gets a vine wrapped around his foot.
He trips around a vine, sure.
With very scary music happening, which is like, maybe it grabbed him.
Maybe.
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 Monster POV all through this, of course.
Yes, but he is fine. Nothing happens. Brody's like, hey, I'm going to go check out this other path. And as he's, like, checking out this path, I'm like, that's not a path, dude. You're, like, having to, like, push branches out of the way and duck under shit. What he's doing is he's making a shortcut to a path.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This bugs me.
And the score is telling us that this is a very scary thing to do.
Very scary.
Don't do this.
Don't touch the ferns. Don't walk on the grass. Stay on the path.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't crush the flowers.
Take only pictures. Leave only footprints, Brody.
If everyone takes a pine cone, there are no pine cones to enjoy. Leave no trace. And so he, gets called by the ship,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when, you know, they're like, hey, how's it going? And he's like, I feel outnumbered by plants. I think things are weird.
Bridger doesn't know what to do with this information.
He just walks away.
Yeah.
And then, Henderson pops out and Brody is very startled.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, oh no, scary girl.
You know she's a girl because she actually smells a flower.
Yes.
She's like, oh, this one's nice. I'm gonna pick it and put it in my little front pocket, take it home.
I think she sticks it, like, down her jumpsuit, actually, because no one knows she takes it.
Right.
So she, like, unzips and, like, sticks it down.
Like, this is a cast that is, again, not gender balanced. There are only two women in the show.
Yeah.
Both of them are really into plants. None of the men are. Why is this so gender-locked?
I don't know. Ford! Ford would have plants.
Ford would have, like, bonsai.
Yes! Like, he'd have, like, bonsai and, like, a little zen garden he has to, like, rake.
And thinking of, like, the generations, if we project, if we combine Sequest Future with actual time, he would have been inspired by Jet Black from Cowboy Bebop to do bonsai.
There you go!
That would have been...
There you go.
Yeah.
Wait. Well, I was just thinking, I was like, okay, about like where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, would he have been introduced to Saru at this point?
Mm-hmm.
When the, because what, it's like 2019 for them.
Oh, like, is he watching Star Trek Discovery?
Yes.
Yes,
and
yes.
Like, oh, man, that dude's got that plants. Dude. I'm going to have plants too. He's cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It lines up. It lines up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever you're not seeing a character on screen on Sequest, just imagine they're watching Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just thinking, you're talking about Cowboy Bebop being in their world. I'm like, what else could be?
He would have been like, I think Ford would have been like 14. And if you are 14, Cowboy Bebop will rewrite your brain.
I didn't see Cowboy Bebop at 14. I only saw Cowboy Bebop like 2 years ago.
And what'd you think?
I like it.
It's good.
It's good shit. I like it. It would have rewritten my brain, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's be honest. I didn't need another thing to become obsessed with at 14. I already got enough deep cuts here.
So yeah, everyone gathers together in the, like, central square of this garden park.
Yes, and Ortiz is having such big allergies.
Yeah.
Poor boy.
And, like, they talk again about taking samples. Ortiz already got a sample. They just chit-chat for a while.
Yeah, they're like, no one's here. There's just a lot of dirt. Like,
Ortiz's allergies are not a setup for a payoff later. We're just killing time.
Yeah.
We're listening to birds chirp.
And Ford's like, okay, here's the deal, Trigg and Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna stay here, and we're gonna all go back to the boat.
All of us who were in last week's episode are leaving. Have fun.
And you're like, oh yeah, you're all gonna die. So they leave them, and they're like, okay, this is cool.
And now the scary music comes back.
And the shaky monster cam.
Of course, of course.
Starts following them around, looking at flowers. But back on the Sequest, Bridger is in his ward room with Brody and Ford and like Lucas. And
they are watching the Mayday recording.
Yes.
That includes the last survivor who we saw in the cold open shouting, there's no time to explain.
Yep.
something only a TV Mayday would say.
Yeah.
You, like...
At least yell, flowers!
You could just...
Plants!
You could describe the plot of this episode, the thing that is dangerous, in two words. He took five words to not say it.
You could also just scream, Little Shop of Horrors! It's real!
It's real!
And that's it. And we'd be like, oh my god, killer plants. Got it.
Those are the two words. It's killer plants.
That also works. And so they're listening to this with... To at this point, this man has remained unnamed.
This is his second appearance. This is his first named appearance.
Not until the next scene that he's in, though. True. He's not named in this scene. It's not until he's in a... He's shown again later in this episode. Or
but,
is he even shown? They just reference him actually by name.
Right, right.
They don't reference in here. So, like... You if have to, I didn't already know.
You have to put two and two together. You have to, this rewards active viewership
yes.
is what it is. So there's this unnamed, unidentified man of authority in a suit.
Yes.
Who we've previously seen in a different level of authority. This is the new Secretary General.
Yes.
I guess Noyce lost his job.
The first time we see him, he is with Noyce.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were doing a transition plan.
I think Noyce had to resign in disgrace after that AI sub almost nuked the world.
That is when we saw Secretary General McGrath for the first time. Yeah. Like he was next to him during that episode.
I think that's how he got the job. Yeah.
But yeah, we don't know his name yet. We don't get a no for like another 20 minutes. It kills me. I'm like, at least like just say it. Like, it's not hard to like say a sentence. You're talking to this man anyways, just say his name.
Or when he's on the video feed, have a little identifying chyron at
yes!
the
yes.
We've seen like SG Noyce on Noyce's video calls before. Why can't we see SG McGrath
it's
on this guy?
So weird to me. That, like, they do not. I'm like, how many scenes were cut where maybe we did say his name? Basically, they're like, yeah, so no one's there. And the dude's like, this is so weird. I'm going to have an emergency meeting about this. Stay in the area, I guess. And they're like, okay. Henderson is in her room listening to a voicemail from her mother.
Uh-huh.
So apparently you can only take calls in the mess.
Yes.
But you can listen to voicemails in your room.
Right.
Does not make sense.
Well, it doesn't make sense for anyone lining up for the shared phone booths to have this, like, 300-square-foot room.
Also that. I'm like, what? Why does she have this room?
They should be in bunks. They should be bunking. What
yes,
is this?
Yes.
She's got the private suite.
It needs to be, like, lower deck shit.
Yeah.
It needs to be, like, Lucas and Tony set up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's got, like, a private room. She's... putting her flower in water, setting it by was it Anderson?
Her stuffed animal.
Her stuffed animal.
Dog creature. I appreciate that it's back. I appreciate that.
It still looks like the jankiest ass shit you get from the carnival.
It's about 5 inches high. It's a little fella.
It's not well made. I'm just gonna say, it's not well made.
So but yeah, she sets up her little flower souvenir in a vase with her stuffed animal looking at it, and she leaves the room. That flower starts to grow. It starts to grow so big, the vase explodes, and we cut to the reaction of the stuffed animal.
With, like, the most, like, intense, dramatic, like, terror music as we zoom in on the stuffed animal's face that's like, oh, fuck. Because that's just, the stuffed animal just has the face of, oh, fuck.
This is the best part of the episode, I think. That's genius.
Very cute.
Meanwhile, inside Calamar Station, like, you know, calamari, this episode has nothing to do with squid. Why are you being cute? What's wrong with you?
The two guys are exploring, and Trig stops replying. And Hansen's like, what the fuck, dude? Stop fucking with me. And then he finds a pile of dust. And then the scary music happens, and the monster point of view camera comes up behind him, and vines grab him. And then we cut to black.
Yeah. So on the other side of the commercial, Darwin's brain is also not talking. Dr. Smith is getting nothing out of this dolphin.
She's apparently been trying to read his brain this whole time.
For like hours.
Yes.
They're all exhausted.
Yes. I'm sorry. I would like try and then be like, okay, I guess he doesn't want to talk. I'll try again later.
Okay. I don't know how psychics work. I'm not a psychic. Sure. But if I'm getting nothing for hours, my first thought is this dolphin has died. Like, something is neurologically wrong. We need to get a CAT scan on the dolphin.
The dolphin has a mind block. Not letting her. Mm-mm-mm. Dolphin didn't give you permission. So Tony and Lucas are also there. Lucas is really tired. Tony's like trying to like pep talk them to keep going. Mm-hmm. He's like, I didn't give up on my life. Like trying to straighten out my life. We're not going to give up on Darwin.
They have a full conversation about like, what is the difference between giving up and calling this and redirecting our efforts to another tactic? Where, what is determination? And it's not great.
No.
Like, but it is just more padding before the big action that we know is going to happen happens.
Well, then Wendy, though, finally gets something from Darwin, and that is 5,600 degrees Kelvin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's like, I don't know what that means. And Bridger's like, that's the color temperature of sunlight.
Ah, he identifies it and determines that Darwin has seasonal affective disorder.
Little buddy, I understand. It's really hard.
It's been a few weeks since Darwin has been to the surface. Therefore, he's got the sads, and so he won't eat and he won't talk.
I totally texted some of my running friends today, like, I think my soul returned to my body because it's 70 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, even with all the shit going on right now, I feel like a different person.
Yeah.
I feel like I can take on the world.
Michael Ironside gave you a hug. I think that
helped. He gave me a hug and it's 70 degrees. I am unstoppable. So yeah, they're like, man, Darwin hasn't seen the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also like, we can't go up to the surface right now because it's nighttime. You know what we can do? We can adjust the lighting in here.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
To save, like, power, they keep it at, like, 3,600.
And so we can crank that shit mm-hmm. and turn the regular lamps into sun lamps. And
yes.
So Bridger does just that thing. And Darwin, after some moments to absorb it, becomes happy. He's happy, Darwin.
I've never felt closer to a dolphin in my life.
How many opportunities have you had?
I mean, anytime I'm in the water, I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Anytime I'm eating raw fish, like, yeah, yeah, they're onto something.
That's where I, like, don't feel like I connect with them, because I want my fish cooked. I don't want it raw. But swimming, sunshine. Appreciation of sea life.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Appreciation of Jonathan Brandis.
Yes.
Yeah.
You
are a dolphin.
I want money.
You're a season two dolphin.
Appreciation of, you know, Bridger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I want to blow up boats, too.
Just plant little tracking beacons on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this has been a success. We're going to give Darwin time to soak up the sun and become himself again. Hooray.
Yes. Some of the crew is eating dinner.
Yes.
Okay, we got like Bridger and Ford and Brody. And Ortiz is given an update that like, you know, the like O2 levels are really off.
Yeah, there's 18% extra oxygen and it's not because of, again, kind of a slow-paced episode. They go through, what, four things that it could have been, and they've already checked them?
Like, oh, this would make sense if, like, I don't know, 18% of our crew got off the boat.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
But they didn't.
And here's five more reasons.
It's not these sensors, it's not this thing, it's not this thing, and Bridger suggests one more thing it could be, and he goes and checks.
And then Ford is going to eat the most delicious looking piece of cake.
Yes! This is a cake with a six-word name. It's so many things going on in this cake.
But he gets interrupted by being called to the bridge. Mm-hmm. So Bridger's like, I'm going to eat your cake.
He leans over with his fork, takes a giant forkful, eats it while making eye contact. Ford has not yet left the room. Psycho shit. Psycho shit.
It's so mean.
This is what they mean when they say the privileges of rank. Only the captain can get away with this.
Gonna steal your cake.
It's prima nocta for cake.
So Ford, without his cake, goes to the bridge. And O'Neill is like, hey, we can't reach the flower boys. Like, they're not answering. And Ford's like, well, fuck, send a landing party.
He's taking this absolutely, like, deadly serious. He's calling for red alert. He's scrambling a full fire team.
Brody, shoot first. Ask questions later.
They take it so seriously that they replay the, like, red alert scramble from the premiere? From To Be or Not To Be?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Look at that recycled footage in slightly different sets.
Yes. So Brody heads off with his crew. This is when we finally learn that it's Secretary General McGrath.
Yes.
And we learn through Bridger being like, hey, Ford, I just had a call with Secretary General McGrath. Blah, 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 blah. Like, that's... They want us to stay in the area.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Ford's, like, walking down the hall, and here's, like, commotion, and, Henderson is in her quarters getting attacked by a giant tree, and the random no-name crew member is trying to, like, get the door open, and Ford comes along and is like, fuck that, I'm gonna laser the shit out of that door so we can just lift it off its hinges, and, like...
He's so strong! So yeah.
And these are like bulk, like the type of like bulkhead sub doors.
These
right?
look like solid plates of steel.
Yeah, these are the type that can like seal and have like watertight, you know, seals so nothing can get in. This isn't just like a door.
Like, obviously they are not made of 3-inch thick steel plate. That's a ridiculous way to build a set. But that's what it's meant to look like. It looks like the interiors of the Sequest were assembled by a crane and not by a pair of dudes.
Yeah. And so when they get the door open, Henderson is caught behind a giant-ass screaming, growling palm tree. And trying to grab her stuffy as they, yank her out.
Priorities.
From the growly tree. And as they get her out, the no-name man gets grabbed by the vines and pulled in. And he
turns into a ghost.
Well, he gets, laid between the branches of this palm.
Uh-huh.
Wrapped in the vines, screaming as it's shaking and growling, and then he just fades to dust.
Yes. He fades away like a ghost, and then the camera focuses on the pile of that distinctive dust.
Yes.
Every one of those little piles they found in the colony was a dude.
Oh, that's where everyone went.
So
this means that, Brody and Ortiz were just, playing with people
They were playing with people. The test results never come back.
We never talk about the test results.
It seems to be redundant all of a sudden. We know what those results are going to have.
Yes.
Maybe we would have figured things out a little faster if Dr. Smith wasn't, mind-reading a dolphin for 4 hours straight.
Maybe. Wes Palin could have done it all. She could have multitasked.
So I do not think this is the dumbest episode of Sequest. Playtime is the dumbest episode of Sequest. But if I want to explain how Sequest gets dumb, this is my go-to. The episode about man-eating plants that roar like dinosaurs.
Roar.
What is that? That's 4 seconds to explain how dumb the show can get sometimes. Playtime is a more full and rich test text. It takes a while to get down to brass tacks.
Yeah. Well, as the plants continue to roar after having just devoured a man to dust, Ford's like, shit, let's put this door back on. And so they just, like, put this door back in the door frame.
Lift with the legs, Ford, come on.
And they, like, start to run away. And the plant just, like, power punches the door out into a panel, so then it explodes with sparks. And it starts coming out the door going, roar!
It chases them down the hallway. They make it to the bridge, and the clamshell doors close. And the whole time it's doing monster POV for a monster that we now know has no eyes.
Yes. It can sense you. It senses you like you're the sun. It knows.
So having seen...
I mean, Wendy told us that, like, plants have feelings. So...
That's true. While she was watering her plants in her room.
So it can feel ya. It knows you're in the area. It's got a sense.
It's got a sense. It's got a people
sense.
Yeah,
it's like a sixth sense. It's when you, like, you know someone's watching you.
So it can turn you to dust and ghost you.
Yes. Your states. Plants. Man.
Yeah. I try to take them out. They're... Pretty much just rooted. So they're in the bridge. They have the full story of what's going on. And Ford radios Brody, and Brody's response is, "You're telling me it has something to do with the plants?" "Yeah, dude. Yeah, it does.
It's the plants. It's quote, plants.
Something to do with the plants, Brody."
So Brody's like, "Fuck." They're like, "Let's go, boys." And they get to the hatch to the sea quest. And oh, wait, it's closed, covered in vines. We're trapped. We can't, like, I don't know, try to hatch at the vines or anything. I guess we're trapped forever. And so then the flowers, these giant palm flowers, start growling and screaming at them. So they're like, "You know what we're going to do? We're going to laser the shit out of them."
Yes.
But it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't.
And it just makes them roar louder. And so they go running.
Flames and sparks are exploding out of these plants, but they do seem fairly unharmed even so.
Yes. Yeah. They're like, "That's fine. That just tickled." And now I'm mad.
Photosynthesis.
Back on the sea quest shakes and they lose contact with the colony, and the plant has, like, busted out of the ballast wrapped itself around the sea quest.
And also, busting those ballast tanks means the sea quest immediately sinks down to the ocean floor, detaching from that hatch.
Yes.
Brody's all alone, except for the, like, dozen dudes he has with him. Yeah. He took a big fire team.
He has, like, 9 dudes with him. And the sea quest, sinks. There's water rushing in. Mm-hmm. There is a kind of cool scene. Well, okay, it's not cool at first because, like, there's water rushing in through, like, a hole in the side of this one wall.
Yeah.
And these dudes, like, come around this corner and immediately, like, get blasted by the water and fall down because they ran directly in front of the water. And I'm like, "Don't do that." But then there's kind of a cool scene where you see them, like, trying to, like, block it, like, patch it with this cool thing that, like, kind of, like, suctions to the wall, and it has valves, and then they can close the valves.
It's cool. Just like they earlier in the episode recycled footage from To Be or Not to Be, now they are finally going back to a bit of the action of To Be or Not to Be. This is our second ever breach patch scene.
Yeah.
And it's great both times.
It's great.
It's good.
It's stuff from, like, it's the stuff that we don't get anymore from season one, where we get, like, in season one, it would be a montage of them trying to fix shit, right?
Yeah.
And, like, that's where we get all the goopy tubes that are getting cut. We don't get that really in season two. But every once in a while, we get, like, a cool moment where it's like, "Oh, look at that device you're using."
We are generally, in season two, generally and by far less interested in systems and technical aspects.
Yeah.
Like, we do not care about the difference between a launch and a sea crab anymore. We have not seen the HR probe in ages.
I care.
But every once in a while, there's like, yeah, a cool bit of equipment. Even so, there's still, we get some.
Yeah.
We got a little bit here. It's nice.
A little bit. But communication is back up. Mm-hmm, O'Neill has been able to get in touch with Brody and is like, hey, we cannot get to you. We have our own problem. You are on your own. And he's like, cool. Let's go run to that house that is surrounded by screaming plants, because it might be safer than being out here surrounded by screaming plants.
Well, you know, he's deep in enemy territory, which is to say dirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they run into the house.
Uh-huh.
Roaring screaming plants all around. I love the scene of them running up the porch into the door, and there's just like 10 roaring giant-ass plants. And when we say like big plants, these are like 10 foot tall.
Yeah, yeah.
Palms that are just waving in the air going, ah!
They're always shot from low angles to emphasize how big they are. These are puppets.
Yes.
Like, these are puppets on poles with a lot of, like, action and flexibility around the blossom at the top of the stalk.
I love them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they, like, run into the house, and the first door that they open inside is the seed vault.
It's labeled seed vault, but what it is a nursery for, like, tiny plants in little plant beds.
Yeah.
I guess it's a double duty.
And I like that they're just like, nope, not there. Mm-mm, we're not mm-mm. going to that one. Instead, they go to the kitchen,
because
that one seems safe. That's where you kill plants, so it's fine.
You know what plants don't do great with? Fire. Let's hope it's a gas stove here. I don't know.
We can, like, practice our mincing.
Yeah.
So back on the SeaQuest, Bridger checks in on Darwin.
Uh-huh.
And Darwin is being fucking cute!
He's being super cute, super sassy, he's his old self.
He just keeps telling him, I'm better! I'm better!
He wants to play, but he can't play because there's a crisis right now.
Yeah.
And, like, this scene ends with, like, Darwin doing his, like, dolphin noises in slow motion.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
In another recycled shot, because, like, Bridger is already, like, straightened up to leave, but suddenly in this shot, in slow motion, Bridger's hands enter the bottom of the frame, and he's wearing a different shirt?
It's a little strange. Don't know why we're in slow motion.
Like, was this episode running 5 seconds short somewhere? What is this for? What is this?
I don't know. But back on the bridge.
Uh-huh.
We're gonna get a status update on where they've sealed things.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas is trying to research the colony to find out what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah.
And apparently their main task was creating new plants.
Yes, new plants to grow in these deep sea dome facilities in the unique growing conditions.
Yes.
Whether that is for food or for timber or for, you know, all the many things that plants are for.
Like, it doesn't really give them any info.
Yeah, yeah.
Wendy has a weird moment of talking about the, like, morals of creating new plants.
Yeah, this is her big anti-GMO speech,
I guess.
Sure, all right.
Yeah.
Not big on video games, and mm-hmm. don't get me started on Roundup Ready corn.
As they're talking through this, and she's like, I'd rather eat my salad than be eaten by it. Bridger's like, you know, we got, like, herbicides on the boat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's cool. Maybe we should have thought about that a while ago.
Before it sank the ship. Because he brings that up and they're already saying, like, I don't think it's going to be enough, Captain. And he's like, well, it's time to try. Well, you had your shot. You had your shot hours ago.
You know how we're going to try? We're going to send Tony in an aqua tube with a tank of herbicide to go infiltrate the area of the ship with the screaming plant.
Uh-huh.
Because fuck Tony, I guess.
I mean, maybe it's only accessible through the tubes at with like the plant choking off the normal passages.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
I hope that's it.
Just like, yeah, it's you, buddy.
I have a theory.
Yeah.
Tony doesn't need lungs. So, and this looks like noxious shit you should not be breathing. So yeah. He's the one person who's safe.
And you're like, to give this stuff is fine to. With your gills. Just breathe through your gills, buddy. I do love his wetsuit that he wears in this episode, and you get the best look at it because it has little cutouts for his gills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's been his wetsuit the whole time, but this episode really
the clearest vision, like spot
really
like,
shows it off. Yeah. Yeah.
I do feel like, and I could be wrong about this, but I feel like they like have moved his gill prosthetics over since season, like the first episode, because when he like reveals them in the pilot, I feel like they're more along his back,
like in Abalon.
Uh huh. And like after that episode, they've always been along the side.
Yes, yes, they've moved lateral.
Yes, yeah.
So meanwhile, inside Calamar, Brody and his fire team are chased out of the kitchen.
Yes, because plants start attacking,
knocking all the like copper cookware off the walls.
So they rush to the seed vault, and are like, "Man, I hope you guys are friendlier."
But that cut is what buys us time for Tony to get in position, and he's on radio with the bridge, and they blow open the hatch, and he just shoots this pesticide that is definitely a CO2 tank, right?
Yeah.
Like, they cannibalized a fire extinguisher for this shot.
Yes.
And it works. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
But it doesn't do anything to the plants. Yeah. The plants do not care.
In the narrative, it's bad. But the prop is good. I like
it. And so he's like, close it! Close it! Close it! But then the plants, they just get mad because they start going through air vents. And they're like, oh shit, where's that air vent go? And they're like, it goes to the moon pool. And Lucas is like, fuck Darwin! And like takes off running. Mm-hmm. And Bridger goes after him too.
And Wendy's all alongside. And they all make it to the moon pool, which is still, of course, lit bright as day. And Darwin doesn't know there's a crisis.
It's like, we gotta play? We gotta play, guys?
All Darwin knows is that no one has time to play with him right now.
He's like, guys, I feel better. Let's have fun. Let's do things. You want to go to a patio? Drink a beer? It's sunny. We have patio time.
I love you, dear.
I am Darwin and his seasonal depression. So they're there, and a plant busts through the air vent, and then immediately starts screaming and withering and melting and burning and dies.
And the one thing in this entire episode that is quick is Bridger, like, seeing this plant die instantly and then looking up at the ceiling lights that he adjusted the color temperature of and going, aha! One thing happens, like, right off.
Yes.
Everything else is just so languid.
And so he's like, aha, I know what to do. They're like, this is what's going on. The plants were raised in artificial light. They don't know real sun. So we gotta, like, turn all the lights up to be daylight. And they're like, O'Neill, do that. And he's like, okay, I'll try. I don't know how long this is going to last.
Right. They're not getting power from the solar cells.
Yeah.
Because they're all wrapped up in plants and also too deep for solar cells to get effective sunlight. But like, okay, we'll use what juice we have. I don't know about this.
But then the ship shakes. And what happens is that all the primary power systems are offline because the plant knows.
I hate that that Bridger's reaction isn't, oh no, we blew the fuses. It's, it knows. No, it fucking doesn't. It's a plant. Okay, you know what?
It sabotaged them.
It roars like a dinosaur. You know what? It knows.
It roars like a dinosaur.
It knows.
One of it died. It knows. And now it is adjusting
It knows.
Making a new strategy.
The power conduits, like, the plant has an engineering degree? What does it know?
It knows. It knows. And so they only got 5 hours of power on this generator, and it's not enough to get the lights up to the level that they need.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the sun is out, but they're on the wrong side of the ocean for the sun.
And so they do get in touch with Brody, and they're like, Brody, here's the deal. You gotta turn the lights up. And he's like, okay, that's gonna be hard. We're getting attacked by plants. Like, you gotta do it. And on the Sequest, they're like, okay, like, our only hope is that there are manual valves to, to, you know.
For the ballast tanks to do, like, a reverse of a crash dive, a crash rise.
Yes. But, like, man, it's gonna be hard to get to them. They're really hard to move. We can't, like, the tunnels we're gonna have to go through are, like, small.
There's only enough space to send one guy, but it's a task that would take the strength of more than six guys. It's impossible. Thankfully, this episode doesn't have a conversation where we eventually remember Dagwood exists.
Yeah.
But they do cut from this scene before anyone remembers Dagwood exists.
Yeah. Because we gotta go check on Brody, who's like, okay, dudes, this is what we're gonna do. We gotta turn the lights up. And this one dude's like, hey, I figured out where the controls are. It's right above us. But the plants are between us and it. And Brody's like, okay, this is what we're gonna do. I'm gonna go out there. And I'm gonna try to get there. And if I don't make it...
In 15 minutes, you send the next guy. Every 15 minutes until someone gets through.
We got 10 tries to do this.
And it will take at most 2.5 hours.
And so they're like, okay. And so he goes out.
Into the jungle of puppets.
And immediately, like, runs into the room with all the plants who are roaring and shit. And he
speaks to the plants. You're supposed to talk to your plants.
And he's like, oh man, you guys, like, my laser gun doesn't do shit to you, but know what it does? I can shoot the ceiling and drop shit on you. That's what I'm gonna do. And he does, and it, like, causes damage enough that he can make a break for it, though a vine steals his shoe.
It steals his dang boot!
And so he takes, running... start out of there to get away from them and dives through a glass window into, like, the control booth.
And like, pushes all the switches up at once with, like, both hands because the switchboard, like, is so wide.
With, like, the most tension ever. Like, it was really hard to do. I know what those types of switches are. They're not hard to move. But he's acting like... The next scene, when Dagwood tries to move these valves that takes the strength of six men, he's like, this takes the strength of five fingers. But I only have one for each button because there's so many buttons. Oh, my fingers.
Oh, no, the fingies. Oh, no, the fingies.
I'm going to have arthritis from this. I don't know what to do.
He'll get a medical discharge for his fingies.
I'm not gonna be able to shoot a gun again, ever. But it's worth it. I'll sacrifice it.
So the lights get very, very bright, and the plants are roasted, and they start making cartoon death noises. Like, one of them really goes...
They all just, like, shake. It's like if you took the Kermit, like, shake, but made it the plants.
Yeah. Oh, so the plants are announcing their very special guest, Sunlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights.
Yeah.
It's time to die really hard on the flower show tonight.
Boom, 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 boom. Having fun tonight, dude?
Yeah, I am. Okay, I'm having a great time. It's a good time over here.
So, Dagwood has crawled through the little hole and gotten to the place where only one person can stand.
More people can stand there than one.
Yeah, they could have just gone through the tunnel single file.
Yeah.
If the passage was
six dudes can definitely fit in that room.
So, though. There are massive very, very weighty looking levers.
Yes.
And they are held in their safe down position by locking pins through eye holes.
Yes.
And this is the information that Bridger is walking Dagwood through over the radio. We couldn't show him a picture. It's fine. It all works out in the end.
Pins are so badly made, Dagwood can't remove them.
They're stuck. He can't do it. So he's just like, I'll try lifting the levers without them, with them still in the way. And he does. He shears these steel locking pins. This is like quarter inch thick.
Yeah.
Dagwood is so strong.
Nothing can stand in his way. And so he gets those levers up, and the ship starts to rise,
It breaches the surface. It rises so fast.
Yes, it looks like a dolphin just popping up.
Ah.
Yeah.
And so as they breach the surface, the captain orders every window opened. The many, many windows that this deep sea vehicle has.
We thought they were dumb before, but man, who knew that they'd save our lives if we have man-eating plants that will die by the sun.
Okay, all right, here's a thought. We already established that the power is fueled by solar cells on the skin of the Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
You've gotten out to the sun. The sun has withered all the plants on the surface. Now, those solar cells are drawing power, and you can use that to light the internal lights. Please, just help me. Just help me a little bit. Just help me a little bit.
My note does say, dumbass window opens.
I don't like the one window. This episode tells us the Sequest is full of windows.
Yeah. There is a faraway shot of the Sequest at the surface just smoking as the plants burn. I'm also over here like, good thing it was sunny out. What if it was overcast?
They all die.
Yeah. So Brody comes back on board.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All of his boys are bringing flowers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I'm like, why?
Why?
Why the fuck are you doing that?
But he himself has a flower. He has a very special flower to award to Dagwood for his heroism and valor.
Yeah. And Dagwood's like, is it dead?
It does look exactly like Henderson's, you moron, you fool.
Yeah, I'm just like, Ford's right there. I was like, Ford, why are you allowing this on board? Did you like check it for a heartbeat? Like, what the fuck? But it is a nice little moment where like Brody is like, really great job, like Dagwood, yeah. Like you did it.
Yeah.
Gives him a little pat on the shoulder and Dagwood like returns it.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
It's a nice like moment of recognizing.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though Brody's like a jerk in the sense of just like, here, take this flower. What? That is terrifying.
While Dagwood is immediately front and center, it's generally in the context of the Paella boys.
Yes.
And to see him get little moments with other people, I want to see him have one of these with Henderson. He did a little bit in Daggers with Dr. Smith,
mm-hmm.
but we could revisit that, you know?
Yeah.
Again, I'm always looking for more connections, for more interweaving of the ensemble, yeah. No matter what show I'm watching.
Yeah. Well, the last scene of this show is Ford, Brody, Wendy, and Lucas around a table waiting because they're like, I don't know. He told us he was cooking something. And Tony comes out with a celebratory plate for them to, you know, celebrate the fact that they're alive.
Yes.
And it is a plate of asparagus.
He made victory asparagus. He's going to eat them plants back.
Yeah, he's like, this is revenge. Sweet revenge as he like picks up some of the biggest asparagus I've seen in my life.
Why does it look gummy? Why does it look gummy?
It's overcooked. It's so overcooked. And like just chomps on it.
It's the neon color of Chicago dog relish. Why is it like that? It looks awful.
It's so big. It's such big asparagus. And so they're all like, we'll eat the plants back, I guess. Sure. And that's the end of the episode.
That is the end of the episode, except Ted Raimi is reporting live from SeaWorld Orlando.
About orcas.
About orcas and about the digital tone board that the staff at SeaWorld Orlando uses to communicate with their orcas.
And he talks so fucking fast.
He has a lot to say, but I'm glad he does because this is an interesting sounding piece of technology.
I wrote SeaWorld auditory thingy. That's all I got because he was talking so fast.
But, like, they have programmed in different tones to mean different instructions and even identifying names.
Yeah.
For, like, yeah, that's cool.
It is cool.
That's cool.
Wish we didn't have to speak so fast about it so I could absorb the information, but sure.
And it's also, like, tuned to his character on the show. There you go. That's mm-hmm, nice. Mm-hmm.
So, do you have a fish fact?
I would like to tell you about Nemo's Garden.
Oh.
Nemo's Garden is an underwater hydroponic system.
Oh.
I'm going to show you some pictures here.
Oh, look at that.
So this is, really, I think it's some weird, like, vanity project looking for multi-millionaire investors who think it's cool.
Yeah.
But
it is cool.
But it makes for great pictures. Yeah. So what these people will do is they will, in shallow seas, shallow enough for sunlight to still be relevant, they will build a dome, fill the dome with air, and then fill that air-filled dome with hydroponic trays or pots to grow whatever you want to grow in the seas. And, like, they are built in a double layer such that the seawater that the air bubble is above will, like, naturally evaporate, collect and condense on the surface, and then that will run down the sides and collect as distilled fresh water for the plants. And that's nice.
Yeah.
You have to still send a diver in to add the like nutrient mix to turn that distilled water into hydroponic solution, but it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they really are beautiful pictures.
The pictures look really fucking cool.
These domes make. Now when I say dome, these are like 10 feet wide. These are a 1 to 2 diver occupancy. Yes. To go and, like, you know, add your plant food to the mix and
yeah,
harvest your herbs and greens. But it's cool. It's cool.
It's cool. Is it practical? No. Is it cool? Yeah.
Yes. I mean, maybe at a remarkable scale. Like, if this could be scaled up either many, many domes to fill out a whole farm or a 40-foot dome, you know. Yeah, why not?
Cool.
So that's, again, that's called Nemo's Garden. Just look it up in image search. They look fucking cool.
They do look fucking cool.
Darlin, have you got a fish fact?
I have a deadly plant fact.
Sure.
So first we're going to talk about water hemlock.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone always hears of poison hemlock, right? But water hemlock has been deemed the most violently toxic plant in North America.
Oh!
It is a large wildflower in the carrot family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Looks a lot like Queen Anne's lace, and is a lot of times confused with edible parsnips or celery.
Oh.
It will kill you. Don't eat it. another North American deadly plant is the white snake root.
Ooh.
It is a herb with a cluster of small white flowers and contains a toxic alcohol. Cows have been known to eat it, and if they do, the toxin can, like, pass into their meat and milk, and mm-hmm, people mm-hmm. can die from consuming it.
But on the other hand, they also play Here I Go Again, and that is a great song.
White Snake Root?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when Steven Root is in a White Snake cover band, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that
absolutely.
Sounds great. Now that I say it, that sounds amazing. Yeah.
So, you know, there's some deadly plants for you. In North America, specifically.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Don't eat things unless you know what they are.
They never say where Calamar Colony is.
No.
No.
No, they don't. They don't tell us what trench it's by.
Or Plateau, the anti-trench.
So, overall, what are your thoughts on this episode?
It's incredibly stupid. It is remarkably stupid.
But it has puppets.
It does have puppets.
And we love a puppet.
Again, I don't think it's remarkably bad. It's just a very stupid premise. And because it is so slow-paced, I think that does lead to moments where the characters seem stupid.
Yeah.
Like...
It's weird what they decide to, like, take the time on, and weird what they decide to skip, such as, like, well, Dagwood can do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, which they do get around to, but the fact that, like, that's not... We don't see someone say that.
Right, right.
But let's talk about...
Let's talk about...
The O2 levels for, like, 5 minutes.
If there's enough plant life to raise the oxygen level to almost one-fifth above normal...
Yeah.
That plant is already too big to not be seen.
Yes. But... This episode does zoom in on a stuffy's face in terror. And you can't fault it for that.
No.
It's great. I do remember, so like, the other day, you're like, okay, I remember this episode that has the plants.
Yes.
I don't remember what they do to kill the plants.
Yes. No, I did not.
And I was just over here like, I remember.
They turn on the lights really bright.
Turn on the lights really, because... Darwin has seasonal depression. I wanted to say it so bad and I couldn't. I was like, nope, you have to wait.
But again, thank you all for joining us. We are back talking about Sequest, and boy, what a fun time that is.
We did not pass Michael Ironside a QR code.
We did not. He only knows we exist in theory. He cannot find us.
Maybe he should, because we all have such good things to say about
him. That's true. Like, all good like, things.
Hey, sir, would you like a little, like, self-confidence boost? We got it for you.
Like, usually, if there's an episode where Roy is just, like... not bringing the A game, we just don't mention it. We let it slide. I think that happens this week.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really feel like he's given material to do that.
Boy, ain't that the truth. But
I don't really necessarily feel like it's his fault.
Yeah. But Michael Ironside, when he joins the cast, always, always professional.
Mm-hmm.
Although that reminds me, there's more Sequest content that we learned at the show, at the convention, that we didn't have at the top.
Yes, we forgot!
There's a vendor.
There's a vendor. Let me look him up, because I follow him online.
There's a vendor whose company is called Ionix Media.
Mm-hmm.
He makes wooden maps?
Yeah, they're like a lot of really cool wooden, wood-burned, and then like layers of wood maps. Typically of attractions at amusement parks or like
the parks themselves.
Yeah. His stuff's really cool.
A few fictional places.
Yeah. Like you got like, you know, the Shire.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Ila Sorna.
Yeah. Or, you know, just Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Semi-fictional places.
Journey into Imagination.
Yeah.
His stuff's really cool, and I always look at his stuff. It's kind of always a thing like, well, if I don't spend other money this year, maybe I'll buy one of these 1 year. And we were looking around the shop, and he was like, oh, Sequest, you know, again, like, I loved that show back when.
Mm-hmm.
And
as a parks person, he had a pair of stories about them filming where their studios were at Universal Studios Orlando.
Yes. Yeah.
So one of them was that, like, they finished early or something broke, so they were done for the day.
Yes.
For technical reasons. I can't remember. But They had the whole cast go out, still in costume, and ride the Jaws ride together.
Yes. And apparently there's a big group shot somewhere out there in the world of them all in costume at this ride.
And in my imagination...
With Roy Scheider. Like, he rode this ride, too. He was there.
And in my imagination, John Ducheino is there, even though he was not on the show at this point.
Yeah.
But I want to imagine that Krieg was along for the ride.
Yes.
Factually, he was not. But that's how I picture it, all the same.
And the second one was like Roy went out and like to the Jaws area.
And in the ride. So there was a period of time. So the Jaws ride is like you're on a boat going through Amity, going around Amity Island.
Yeah.
And you've got your tour guide pointing out points of interest. And wouldn't you know it, a shark interrupts things at a certain point along the way.
Yeah.
So Roy Scheider was out in the ride. So when the boats would go by and in the spiel, the employees like, oh, and on the right side of the boat, you'll see the house of our own sheriff here at Amity, Sheriff Brody. Roy Scheider would then just like be on the porch waving at people.
Which I'm just like, oh my God, someone has to have a picture of this
right?
somewhere. My God. I want to see it.
What a time. What a time.
It's amazing.
One lucky year where that such a thing would be possible.
Do you think I could get this guy for the Jaws map that he has? Could he put in little like Roy?
Put a tiny Roy?
Put a tiny little Roy in there waving. So that was fun. The Sequest sea suits bringing everyone together.
Yeah.
Sharing the joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you would like to help us share the joy, I encourage that impulse. One thing you can do is leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and wherever else you listen. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes. You can also go tell a friend. Maybe you want to go to your own Comic-Con dressed in Sequest sea suits and like tell everyone about Whiskers. You can do that. I can send you a QR code that you can print out and, like, pass out.
Yeah. You put, like, 16, 20 to a sheet?
Yeah.
They're very cute.
They're very cute.
Well, of course they're cute. They have B-Drops cover art. It's fantastic.
So you could do that. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. You can also follow us on Blue Sky as Whiskers.
Yes. WSKRS.bisky.social.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of fun over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's all we have to say this time in the exciting, exciting world of carnivorous plants that roar like dinosaurs.
Roar! What if they were just trying to say Roy the whole time?
Oh, they're just big fans!
And they just, like, can't pronounce it. And they're just like, Roy! Roy! Can I get your autograph, Roy?
Oh, I loved you in Canute, Roy! Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy. That's our Roy.
So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Howard Ashman,
whatever they offer you, don't feed the plants.